All my American-based hockey fans will recognize that one from the 2000s. That's the NHL on Versus theme song. Not that that's where we're going to be concentrating on today specifically, because the hockey players we'll be talking about in this tilt will be pretty much cross-cutting all over just different generations. But I felt that was appropriate. Hadn't used it for a while, so that's where I went. Anyways, hello! Okay, no Seinfeld fans out there? Too old of a reference? Okay, I get it. Anyways, hey, I just hope all of you out there in Hockeyland are doing okay today. This podcast is known as From the Point, and as always, I am your host, Danny Lambert. Hoping you're having a wonderful go of it this week, and I'm very, 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 very glad that you decided to find your way back here if you're a continuing listener, or if you're a new listener that you found your way here in the first place to tune in for today's episode as we take another deep dive into the world of a great hockey book. I'm still reeling from this weekend, I'll be honest. Lake Tahoe was very cool. I mean, everybody watch those outdoor games? Very scenic, eh? Yeah, it was a bummer to see kind of the pause that happened with the VGK Avalanche game, for sure, but it was what needed to be done in the end. I mean, you can't skate on soup after all. And that sun was totally unexpected. I don't care what anybody says. The weatherman, you can't cancel on a forecast. And the forecast actually looked pretty good anyway. So, but basically the night game ended up being very good anyways at night. And so, you know, big redemption for that game. And then the next day with Boston and Philly, that was a good one. But I liked seeing those cool Avalanche reverse retro jerseys, the Nordique on them. Oh, that was cool. You gotta love that. I mean, just awesome. Blend, and I like how that jersey kind of blends the past and then, you know, goes in with the colors of their current uniforms. Really cool. Still, this week it's back to reality, and I'm just looking forward to a very COVID-free week across the league so that we can concentrate on hockey a little bit more, and it seems like it's going that way so far, which is great. But as for this week's book, I'm excited because this is a book that is a collection of a few short hockey stories that follow a very dubious group from the lore of NHL history. Making it to the ranks of the NHL is not an easy road. As I've seen in many different stories of hockey players, just to make it to the league and play one game is an accomplishment. And many try, and only few realize that dream. For the few who get there, it seems like even fewer get to stay for very long, as just putting on an NHL sweater seems to be reward enough. All players growing up really sort of, you know, I mean, we all get there, dream of hockey glory on driveways and backyard rinks, and at least putting one puck in the net while playing on the best stage in the world up with the NHL. Some do it, and some don't. For those who do get to tally a goal, there's a dubious group of players who only get to do it once in the NHL. For whatever reasons they had, be it only a few games played in the league, having not enough role of a forward or scorer, or being a goaltender, or an injury, the group of players who have netted only one career goal in the NHL is a very eclectic group, who all have their stories that go well beyond the one goal that they scored. Sure, many times the one goal that they tallied ended up being a great story. Some scored to win the game, some scored off a great shot, some scored in the open net with the goaltender pulled, some scored on a fluke deflection. Still, there are lots of ways that the members of this club tallied a notch on the scoreboard. But have you ever wondered what got them to that point and what happened to them afterwards? Well, even if you haven't, Ken Reed has, and has done you a solid by writing a wonderful book about this exclusive club of players. In his book, One to Remember, Stories from 39 Members of the NHL's One Goal Club, Reed tells some great hockey stories cemented around the realization of every hockey player's dream to score a goal in the NHL. So buckle up, get ready, because it should be a fun one this week as we jump into the warm-up coming up to you after this.
Lead pass, Daniel have a deflect off his skate. Now he chases after the puck. Weber beats him to it and finds Joel Ward is knocked down. Canucks steal the puck. Here's a chance for Sweat. Scores!
Oh, man.
Lee Sweat. His first goal in his first game.
Lee Sweat came off the bench for Kevin Bieksa. And the play was going the other way, so he just jumps up into the play. hollers for the puck, and in it goes. There's Lee Sweat is off the bench. Spinorama, and look at that wrist shot. Not bad. Lee Sweat's a short guy, but he uses a longer stick, and you can see the goalie has some problems with that. And Sweat gets that stick out there, and Pekarinen can't read it very well, and in it goes.
So what you heard there was the call from Lee Sweat's goal, his only goal in the NHL when he was with the Vancouver Canucks. It's a really cool goal, and that's one of the ones, the stories that's included in the book that Reed really goes over really well, and I really liked his story. We're going to talk more about his story specifically here coming up in the first period when we go over a specific group of the one goal club that Reed describes in his book. But good goal, good play call on it, so I hope you enjoyed it. Getting into the warm-up, I just want to start and say I'll take the lead of Mr. Reed here and say, like he did in the introduction to his book, and set the table for the discussion by saying that in the history of the NHL, just over 6,500 men have suited up to play one shift, just one shift in the NHL. But of those 6,500, over 1,500 of them have never scored a goal. Using my public school education, that's about 23% of players who have put on an NHL sweater have never tallied a goal. It's not a given that because you make it to the NHL that you'll actually get to put the puck in the net. It's an accomplishment in and of itself, and of course, it's not something that's easy to do. I read this book, and what stood out to me was the human factor of everybody's story. As alluded to earlier, the idea that these men sacrificed so much and in the end only had one goal to show for it when they got to the NHL is pretty heavy when you really drill it down. Also, what struck me as equally amazing is how many of them look back on it now and just how they see it. Some spoke of serious reverence and accomplishment about it as, you know, kind of the highlight of their life and playing career. While others were not very excited to tell the story about their one goal and saw other things that they did in professional hockey as more important. Some of the guys had their pucks on display in their house and a nice plaque given to them by the team, and some don't even know where their puck is today, and in some cases really don't care. That's why the book is so much fun to read, because it's about the story behind and not necessarily about the act. As I've said before, not all hockey stories are about hockey superstars. In fact, some of the best hockey stories ever are about the players who fought hard through huge odds, and while they didn't quite make it to the Hall of Fame, they stand out as great hockey stories as we can all learn from them and enjoy them at the same time. This book has a ton of those kind of stories, 39 to be exact, as the title indicates. The arc of these players is great, and Reed gives you a ton of different experiences. For example, one minute you're reading about Mike Forbes, a stay-at-home defenseman who played on the 1981 Oilers and whose lone goal was assisted by Gretzky and Curry, and then ended up being in the minors for the rest of his career, missing out on the Oilers' cup runs that would come after in the 1980s. And then the next minute you're reading about Mike English, who was a budding tough guy for the LA Kings, but his career was cut short by a stabbing incident that happened off ice during the 1988 playoffs, and whose lone goal was on the power play and against the Flames 1 week before his stabbing. It's a smattering of just wonderful hockey stories, and the list goes on. For me too, you can tell that this is a well-written book right from the beginning. Reed does his homework on all these players. But almost as importantly as the interviews he gets from the players themselves, he paints the picture of how their goal came to be and really put it into context in their life. Also, the stories themselves are only about 3 to 4 pages apiece, and that is a lot of fun, as it just takes small bites to really ingest the entire book and keep your interest all the way through. And I always appreciate that, for one. Makes it easier to break the book up. It's just funny how these stories just kind of go by really quickly, and the next thing you know, you're almost done with the book. Pretty easy. So as we start our discussion on this book, I think it's fair to break down the discussion into 3 categories of stories, or we could be here for a long time. I don't have time to go over all 39 players, but that read profiles, but we're going to get close. We'll get a few in. But I really just want to weave through a few of the big themes that I thought were interesting from the book. First, I think we'll start a discussion about players who were massively successful players in professional hockey, but still only had one goal in the NHL. There's so many reasons why they only got their one NHL goal despite having immense talent. And more importantly, their path through the ranks of other professional leagues is a constant reminder that the great hockey and great players don't always exist in the NHL. They sometimes are found in different countries and in different leagues. That's just what happens. It can be said that the NHL is the best in the world and has the best players, but sometimes not all of them play in the NHL. With that in mind, we'll kick this contest off and start the first period discussion, starting up after this.
Career National Hockey League goal. Congratulations to him, and he stands by with Mark Stiles.
Yeah, you know, Charlie was talking about his first goal. Richie, you get your first goal tonight. We're going to have a look at it on the monitor. Tell us about this first one ever in the National Hockey League.
All right. I thought I got the puck from Lombo there, and guy was right on me. I didn't think I had much time, so I just tried to get it to the net. And I think that's Chucky there, did a great job screening. So that's all there is to it, I guess.
Geez, I got to wonder, when you walked in the locker room tonight, did you feel like you were in Omaha? There's so many guys called up right now.
Yeah, it's great to see. There's Boyder and Mosser came up today, me, Bitsy, and Gio. It's great to see all the hard work's paying off for those guys and myself.
And I know you've done a couple of interviews today with your big brother, Robin.
Yeah, it's great. It's just the icing on the cake, I guess, with him here.
All right, first goal ever in the NHL, 2-0 through 20. Thanks for doing this with us.
All right, thank you.
All right, Richie Regeer, our National Hockey League, as we mentioned, and in the community where the Flames are always busy, we're going to show our first piece tonight.
That was Richie Regeer in 2006 talking about his first and only NHL goal for the Calgary Flames. You might recognize that last name, that Regeer. Yes, that is Robin Regeer's brother, Richie, who actually did get to play with him on the Flames. But as we'll see later in this period, we're going to get to his story specifically. You'll see that Richie's time in the NHL might have been short, but his professional career was actually very long. And that's just kind of a common thread through the one goal club that is worth discussing. And that's where we're going to take the first period. So across the hockey world, it's largely accepted that the best competition in players are found in the NHL. But that doesn't mean that other leagues in North America and Europe don't offer a great brand of professional hockey. Many players use those leagues as a springboard into the NHL. Some use those leagues to find a good spot to land after the NHL is done with them, and some even reach the level of those leagues and just kind of stay there because that's where they want to be. Just because you're playing in a different professional league than the NHL doesn't mean that you are, may have been, or will be a future caliber NHL player. The fact is, sometimes a different professional league is better for a player due to many reasons. Look at, say, the KHL. It's not the NHL, but it draws in players from all over the world, and many have stayed there a long time without even wanting to go back to or get into the NHL to begin with. Reed definitely found a bunch of different stories from the one goal club that really fit this mold. For example, is the one that we talked about at the beginning of the period with the clip. Richie Regeer, like we said, brother of former Flames workhorse Robin Regeer, tallied his only lone goal while playing with his brother on the Flames in his second stint in the NHL in 2006. It looked like the perfect situation for the younger Regeer, who looked to be in the plans of the Flames organization for years to come. Then, only 1 week after scoring his goal, Richie suffered a season-ending concussion and went into the summer pondering his future in the NHL and the game of hockey overall. Richie made a move that seemed to be the right one given his circumstances. He decided that for his career longevity, he would sign to play in Germany that summer. Initially, his thought was to give himself some time to heal, as the game over there was less physical and on a bigger sheet of ice. Just a little more, as he says, it was just more of a laid-back philosophy there. And so Richie decided he would try his fortunes over in Europe for just a bit. After his second season, he was offered a one-way contract by Daryl Sutter to rejoin the Flames. he had done so well in Germany, he still had drawn the notice of professionals back here in North America, and his former team, the Flames, wanted him back. But in the end, Richie turned him down, turned down the Flames' offer, as he saw longevity in playing in Europe and actually sort of enjoyed it. And basically, he was right, because he was able to play for a lot longer than he probably would have in the NHL, retiring fully healthy after the 2017-2018 season, and realizing the goal of having, like we said, a healthy life after playing hockey. Also, five league championships made it pretty easy and pretty fun, according to Richie. As Regeer explains it, it was the journey just to get there that made his time in the NHL great. The goal was just really only part of it. It's funny, though, that there are a ton of players who find successes in other leagues just like Regeer, especially in Europe. Sometimes, though, they simply are able to play around the minor leagues in North America after their short stint in the NHL. They don't have to go overseas. Reed's profile of Kimby Daniels, a former third-round pick of the Flyers, is a great example of this. Daniels was a highly touted prospect who put up 94 points in his draft year with Swift Current, leading him to be picked by the Philadelphia Flyers so highly. After playing two games with the Flyers in the 1990-91 season at the age of 18, he returned to Swift Current and tallied 118 points that season. Then the next season, he played 25 games with the Flyers and got his goal, his lone NHL goal, five games into that run off a slap shot that he didn't think was going in, but beat John Casey of the North Stars. But it did and was the game winner in a 5-2 win over the North Stars. He still didn't score a point after that and was frustrated. Frustrated in his efforts, but still returned back to the WHL, this time to play with Seattle, as he was still young enough to go back to junior at that point. But when Daniels reported to camp with the Flyers in 1992, they discovered his knee had a degenerative issue and required major surgery to have a bone graft put into his knee to save the degeneration. He was never quite the same after the surgery and didn't have the speed and ability he once did. But the surgery did what they thought, and Kimby ended up playing hockey for another 16 years, but never made it back to the NHL. He played in the IHL, WCHL, AHL, and ECHL for 19 different teams and tallied 867 points. Not bad, actually, and a very long career all done in North America, except for one season in Finland, and it was all done outside of the NHL. Even though a majority of players who reached that one-goal height did it pretty early, they were forced to finish in other leagues outside the NHL. There is sometimes, though, the case of a player who tallies their lone goal after paying dues in other leagues, and that goal is one of the best stat lines you'll see. Lee Sweat was a solid defenseman who played 4 years at Colorado College, but ended up not being drafted by an NHL squad. To get noticed by NHL squads, he made a shrewd move of playing in the Finnish Elite League after his junior year and was one of the best defensemen in the league as he and his team TPS Turku skated to a championship that year. This led to offers by the Kings and Flyers, but Sweat decided to head back to Colorado College for his senior year. That ended up being a mistake, if you look at it from that way, as Sweat played well, but the Eagles did not, and thus, at the end of the 2007 NCAA season, there were no offers from an NHL team for Sweat to join them. Sweat did, however, sign a PTO with San Antonio of the AHL, but that did not materialize into a long-term contract. So Sweat, seeing no other options, decided to head back to Finland in Turku, where he had been before. After that, he spent time in Austria and in the KHL as well. In all, he spent 4 seasons in Europe, and then, in 2010, got a call from the Canucks, and ended up signing with them and being assigned to their AHL affiliate, the Manitoba Moose. Sweat played 3 games with the Canucks after his call-up in January of 2011. He got his first goal in a game against Nashville. First and only goal. As fate would have it, he scored off an awesome no-look pass from Daniel Sedin, which he wristed past Pecorini to notch the game winner in that game. The very next shift, Sweat blocked a Shea Weber shot off the inside of his foot and was able to play through the pain for two more games, but ended up getting hit in the foot the same place in practice after that third game that he had up and broke his foot. He never made it back after that season, and despite signing with Ottawa in the offseason that year, he decided to call it quits before skating another shift in the NHL, this time with the Senators. So he never actually ended up playing for Ottawa. Sweat decided that he wanted to keep himself away from another concussion or further damage to his body. He had a college degree, and at 26, he decided to go out on top, as his last hockey game was played in the NHL and not in the minor leagues. So the three players that we just talked about that bounced around into other leagues are just a fraction of the one goal club, really. But what their story really tells us is that there's often a lot of hockey to be played before and after those goals, and much of it isn't in the NHL. You might find yourself elsewhere. It's not always about the beginning or the end. It's just about the journey, really, and how you get there. And that's something that we're going to continue to see a theme of, and if you read the book, you'll see even more of. Now, though, I'd like to change gears and talk about a segment of the One Goal Club that is full of players who've had long and distinguished careers in the NHL. Including amongst their ranks is a four-time Stanley Cup winner. More on that in the second period, coming up right after this.
January 2nd, 1999, Ottawa Senators versus the New Jersey Devils in Ottawa. Damian Rhodes makes 30 saves in a 6-0 shutout victory for the Sens, but his contribution to the offense makes this game remarkable. With the Sens leading 1-0, Devils goalie Martin Brodeur leaves the net for the extra attacker. Rhodes deflects the puck into the corner, and New Jersey defenseman Lyle Oderline tries to pass it to the point. Scott Niedermeyer misses the pass, and the puck travels all the way down the ice into the Devils' goal. Rhodes was the last Senator to touch the puck, so he gets credit for the goal. He becomes the first goalie in NHL history to score a goal in a shutout victory. Damian Rhodes scores a goal. A great game in Senators' history.
So that was the call from a very special goal that a goaltender scored, Damian Rhodes of the Ottawa Senators. That's actually from the Senators kind of history vault. What I found really cool about that is just if you watch the clip, he gets called as one of the stars of the game and then takes his goalie stick and puts it, holsters it like he had just scored his goal like a sniper. It's kind of cool, kind of awesome. But we'll talk more about Rhodes here in a little bit, but that's where we're going with this period. We're going to talk about goaltenders. When you look at it at the surface, the job of a goaltender is really simple. You just stop the puck from going in the net. Sure, there's some other things to it, but when you look at it, what metrics a goaltender is really graded against, they all revolve around keeping the opposing team from scoring. Still, if you've got a goaltender who can move the puck, it's an added plus. As they say, it's like having a third defenseman to help with breakout plays. After all, we know that it's rare but not uncommon for a netminder to tally a few assists in their career. Heck, Martin Brodeur notched 45 assists in his 21-year career. That's pretty awesome. But still, even more uncommon and even more impressive is when a goaltender does the opposite of their main function on the ice and tallies a goal of their own. It's certainly a rare thing to have scored a goal in the NHL, but to do so as a goaltender is perhaps as rare as winning the Powerball. In fact, the numbers are that 12 different goaltenders have scored 15 different times in the NHL. And if that wasn't enough wow factor, the first goal recorded by an NHL goaltender was not until 1979. In One to Remember, Reed profiles three goaltenders who all tallied once. The first one he profiles is the first man to do it in the NHL, four-time Stanley Cup winner and Hall of Famer Billy Smith. As the backstop of the New York Islanders' four-cup dynasty in the 1980s, Smith was a dominant goaltender and not really known much as a puck mover and wouldn't have necessarily been a candidate for a goaltender scoring a goal like, say, Brodeur is. As a matter of fact, Smith's goal would have had nothing to do with his puck-moving skills at all. But on November 28, 1979, against the Colorado Rockies, Smith tallied his goal in a most unique way. The Rockies goaltender had left the bench on a delayed penalty against the Islanders. A shot deflected off Smith's chest and into the corner, where Rockies rookie defenseman Rob Ramage picked up the puck and made a blind pass towards the opposing blue line, hoping to find a shooter. Nobody was there, and the puck ended up going the length of the ice and into the Rockies' open net. Since Smith was the last Islander to touch the puck, he got credit for the goal. Smith really downplays the whole thing to Reed when he was interviewed, and basically explains that it wasn't much of a big deal at the time. The puck actually got into the seats a little bit later, as nobody collected it, and they ended up losing the game, so Smith was really actually more concerned with that than the fact that he had scored a goal in that game. Smith does admit that he feels it's important to be the first, but in the end, he knows that when Ron Hextall actually shot one into the opposing net in December 1987, that was the real first goaltender goal scored in NHL history. Moving right along, Reed also tells the story of a similar goal and goalie that scored right after that he tells right after telling Smith's story, which, as I said in the warm-up, is why this book is so great. The profiles of each goal and each goal scorer seems to be the same, but it's different every time, where you just eat up the details. It's those details that are a little bit different, and it makes the story that much better and that much more unique, even though there may be a few things that sound the same as one of the stories that you'd heard before. But at any rate, the next goaltender whose story was told was Chris Mason, who was then playing for the Nashville Predators. Unlike Smith, Mason is not a Hall of Famer or a Stanley Cup winner. He did have a pretty strong career over 11 years with Nashville, St. Louis, and Atlanta / Winnipeg, with a strong career totals of 2.66 goals against and a .909 save percentage. But this particular tilt when he tallied his goal was against the Phoenix Coyotes. And much like Smith's goal, it was due to the Coyotes pulling their netminder for an extra attacker on the delayed penalty to the Preds. Mason stopped a Jeff Sanderson slapper, which was deflected and worked back around to the point to the waiting Sanderson for his second try. But as fate would have it, the puck bounced over Sanderson's stick and sailed all the way down to the Coyotes' goal and into the open net. Initially, Mason actually wasn't credited with the goal. But after the game, it was actually the suggestion of to be replayed by then Coyotes commentator and former netminder Darren Pang that ended up getting Mason the credit for the goal. Even though if you ever watch it, it's pretty obvious. I mean, he was the last Predator to touch the puck. Much like Smith, Mason played down the importance of the goal, but puts a humorous spin on it, saying that maybe he can change the story when he's an old grandpa that he fired it into the goal himself to make it seem a lot cooler than it actually is. So, if Mason and Smith's goals aren't crazy enough, the story of the third of the three goaltenders in the book that Reed profiles is pretty much more of the same. So, apparently this happens quite a lot. Well, seems like it happens quite a lot. Damien Rhodes played for 10 seasons in the NHL, for Toronto, Ottawa, and Atlanta. It was a pretty solid puck mover who actually tallied an impressive 6 assists over his career to accompany his solid goal-stopping stats. Rhodes, who was playing for the Ottawa Senators on January 2, 1999 against New Jersey, found himself in a situation like Smith and Mason where he stopped the shot during a delayed penalty, and then the puck was subsequently played by the other team, who missed the point man on a pass, and the puck trickled all the way down into the Devil's net. The difference here was that Rhodes' goal made it 2-0 for the Senators, who would go on to win the tilt 6-0. Reed asked Rhodes about the fact that if he would have gotten the game-winning goal, but would have ended up ruining his shutout. Basically, Reed asked him, "Hey, well, what do you think of that?" Rhodes' explanation was that he probably would have gotten a bonus for the shutout, and therefore he would have probably have liked having that a little bit more, so sort of letting one in to make his the game winner really wasn't something he wanted to do. And as you heard from the video clip, too, it was also pretty dubious because it was the first game-winning goal by a goaltender in a shutout like that. So kind of cool. So as you can see, for every shot-on-goal type of goal that like a Brodeur or a Hextall got, there's just as many craziness own-goal type of scores that lead to goaltenders getting a goal tallied in the goal column for them. For me, what I enjoyed most about the goaltender section is simply Reed's examination of players who largely get a kick out of their goals, but still didn't care because it really wasn't their primary job. I mean, they liked the fact that they scored, but as you can see in the story, all three of them really were more concerned with being goaltenders than actually scoring goals. It's another aspect, though, to the one goal club that, to me, makes it pretty special. But in the final frame, I want to scope in on another cross-section of players from the one goal club who, like goaltenders, actually in many cases had long NHL careers despite only tallying one goal. Get ready for that in the third period, which is up after this.
Nice move by Norwood right there to evade Mark Osborne. McRae rolls it deep into the Toronto zone. Osborne along the boards, tried to jam it out, and he does get it. Chris McRae wearing number 5, just his second game with the Red Wings, called up from Adirondack, and he's going to go with Kordick. Chris McRae, who started his career with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Kordick's a lefty now, and this is a challenge. If McRae could beat Kordick, there goes momentum for the Leafs, but Kordick's a tough one, boy. And that's why he's in the Leaf lineup tonight. No question about it. McRae waits till he gets the left loose and goes at him. He makes no bones about going right after the big Leaf tough guy right there. And they're going to let these two just hammer it out. Both lefties. Look at him. This is about as long as we've seen a couple guys fight David a long time, but big size difference between McRae and Kordick.
That was the call off of then Detroit Red Wings tough man Chris McRae and his lone NHL goal, which was actually a pretty good shot when you look at it. He got a good pass from Sean Burr that went to the slot, and he was able to get a good shot off, and it's actually a really good goal if you watch it. But really unexpected for McRae, but at the same time still really cool. And as we know, that was his only NHL goal. So something to check out. Definitely look at that one on YouTube for sure. Like I said, though, McRae is a tough guy, and that's what we're going to talk about, because hockey enforcers are not really on the ice to score goals, as we know. That's just not what they get paid to do. Still, if you give someone enough looks at the net, they're going to get lucky and put one past the goaltender at some point. That's the way it happens for most enforcers. They just play enough games, and eventually, abracadabra, they've got a goal. Over the course of multiple NHL season campaigns, some get multiple goals, some get no goals. And as you might have guessed, some get only one goal in their career to put on the stat sheet. That's what's crazy for enforcers. Many of them, even though they know their role is to simply fight, they are over the moon when they score a goal, and even if it's that one goal. And for some of them, they really couldn't just care much. So once again, mixed bag, just like the rest of the one goal club. Reed tells a story of both kind of enforcers in this book. The first enforcer he profiles is Dennis Bonnevie. Bonnevie played in parts of 9 seasons with Edmonton, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Boston, Ottawa, and Colorado. His 311 penalty minutes shows that he was certainly earning his pay, and it could be said that you don't get to stick around for 9 years in the league if you aren't good at what you do. So that's why it was that Bonnevie could go 7 years in his NHL career before he even notched one goal. Bonnevie wasn't the biggest player at 5'11 and 205 pounds, but he decided in junior hockey that he was definitely going to be the toughest player at all, and he usually was. He knew fighting was a tough road, but he embraced it as his ticket to get up to the show. But on the night of February 26, 2002, playing for the Boston Bruins, Dennis caught the New York Islanders on a line change and was able to fire a slap shot from the blue line that he didn't think was going to go in, but it did. The shot beat Chris Osgood through the five hole, and everyone on the Bruins was so surprised, to include linemate Benoit Hogue, who asked him if there was something wrong after he scored that goal. So Dennis was a special case in that he had a long career as an NHL tough guy, which really isn't kind of the case with the one goal club when you look at the enforcers that are on there especially. The next story that stuck out to me in the tough guy category was Frank Beaton's story. His is one that is unique to being a tough guy and to his era when he played. Beaton played 153 professional games in leagues in North America that were set, and he even played in one that was said to be on par with the NHL before he made his NHL debut in 1978-79 with the Rangers. You probably guessed it, that Beaton played in the WHA, the Rebel League, and moved into the NHL after the two leagues merged. Beaton actually scored a few times in the WHA before he stepped onto the NHL ice. As a matter of fact, in the WHA, he tallied 12 goals in 3 seasons. Not too shabby for an enforcer, really. But by the time he started playing for the Rangers, it took him 21 games to notch his single NHL goal. Oh, and in his second season, he led the league in penalty minutes in the WHA with 274. Just as a side note, Beaton's one NHL tally on January 23rd in Vancouver against the Canucks was, as Beaton would describe to Reed, really not the greatest goal in the world. Beaton tells Reed that he likes to joke that he wish it was that he took the puck from behind his net in his own zone, split the D coast to coast on a breakaway, and then simply just beat the goaltender on the glove side. But in the end, it was simply a rebound that he got decent enough of a backhand on that he just put it right past the goaltender. Beaton knew it was special because guys like him didn't score too much in the NHL. As he says to Reed at the end of his profile, "I'm fucking proud that I got to score one goal in the National Hockey League. They can't take that away from me. It's recorded, and they'll never take it away. I did it. I scored a goal." Beaton went on to play a few seasons in the AHL and CHL after his goal-scoring season of 1979-80, but he never made it back to the NHL. I don't think Frank really was too upset, and the man nicknamed Never just kept doing what he's always done. He just never quit until it was time for him to leave. Kind of a cool story. I like that one a lot. But finally, the last tough guy story that I enjoyed from Reed's profiles was the story of Chris McRae, whose goal that we heard to start this period off. You might recognize that last name right away. And yes, you are right in your instincts. Chris's older brother is famous NHL enforcer Basil McRae. Chris, like his brother, was a big, brutal enforcer. But unlike Basil, who played 576 NHL games and notched 53 goals, Chris only played 21 games and tallied one goal. Chris's lone goal came in his 21st and final NHL game played. He spent parts of 3 seasons before that with the Maple Leafs and the Red Wings. This night, he was suited up for the Red Wings on April 1st, 1990. Both they and their opponent, the Flyers, were out of the playoffs and really didn't need or want to play a hard or physical game. The season was over and both teams were going nowhere. So there was really no need for McRae to fight that night. But still, Chris got real bits of ice time that night and made the best of it as he took a first period Sean Burr pass in the slot and one-timed it past the Flyers netminder to get his one and only NHL goal. That was his last NHL contest subsequently, but he did spend 2 more seasons in the pro ranks in the AHL and IHL. After his career, he got a job working in the world of finance and looks back at his goal saying it was great that he just got to play like a kid in that game and not have to worry about fighting, because not having to worry about fighting led him to be able to just score that goal and feel like he did once again in that driveway as a kid. And that was a great look at the world of an enforcer. But most of all, what I gleaned from this period is that many of these guys just like to play and did it their way by fighting. But inside, they're just like all the rest of us, you know. They grow up wanting to score goals and win the game just like everybody else. So when one of them actually gets to do it, even if it's just once in the NHL, it's kind of special for them. For sure. Anyways, that's it for this final frame. Let's get to the post game and wrap this one up right after this.
For the Rangers, Samuelson leads it back. Gretzky, Carpot sent the shot, deflected in front. Reagan score! Could not control the rebound! And the New York Rangers have taken an 8-1 lead. Dubé, Christian Dubé, the 19-year-old on the power play. Number one.
Boy, everybody's getting into the act. This is a fun game for the New York Rangers. And as the fun quotient goes up for the New York Rangers, the pain quotient goes up for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it's just pretty innocent. Nobody cleared him out, and Christian Dubé has goal number 8 for the Rangers and goal number 1 of his career.
That was the call for Christian Dubé's only NHL goal. But it was a pretty cool one playing for the Rangers. As you heard, he got the pass from Alexander Karpatsev, put it right past the goalie. Very exciting. And what made it exciting for me, too, is hearing Gary Thorne on the call. If you grew up in the United States and you're a hockey fan, especially my age, you remember Gary Thorne on National Hockey Night. Very cool. Takes me back. But I don't want to take away from Dubé. I just want to say that Dubé's goal is another great one that's profiled in Reed's book that you definitely want to read about. And you want to read about Dubé's story. And that's kind of where I want to leave and one of the things I want you to think about as we leave the discussion about this book, that we only discussed a minuscule part of this book. There's so much more, so many great stories and aspects to those stories that I encourage you to go out and read the book and figure out. But what's crazy for me is that Reed really even found these 39 stories. But when you think about it even further, it's only a fraction of the one goal club, which is crazy in and of itself. Still, hopefully you realize what I came to notice is the main theme of the book, really. It's not about the goal, it's about the player, and it's about their story. Sure, the goal is an important part of their story in some cases, but I think what's really cool is it's only, like I said, it's only part of the story. The player is the story. And I think that's really what One to Remember is about. It's not about the goal, it's about the player. And one thread that seems to weave its way through the entire One Goal group as a whole is that, except for maybe the goaltenders, for many different reasons, they all had to fight in through different circumstances and different obstacles to get to that goal. I think about the players we talked about who were in their mid-20s, or in one case, one that we didn't talk about who was in their early 30s, that they had to work so much before that to even get to that goal. And that sacrifice, if you didn't go over it, would just not even do that goal any justice, especially in the telling of that story. So that's why the book is special. I mean, it doesn't leave that part out. If you read this book, you'll learn even more that the life of a non-NHL superstar is like. It's hard and oftentimes more compelling than the superstars. Now, I've said that before, if you've listened to the show before, so that's not new. But this book reinforces that idea on like a whole nother level for me. Not every player can be Gretzky or Crosby, but I think for almost all those players profiled in this book, they all felt like those two players for one split second when they tallied that goal, which is kind of cool to think about. So go out there and get this book. You won't be disappointed. Read like he has in the past and in this book will keep you interested with great human stories, not just hockey stories. I read this book quickly, not because it was short, but because it was good, and like I said earlier, it was easy to digest 3 to 4 pages of each player's story and do it in a relatively quick manner. And finally, I found that this book was a good history of the game as the players profiled spanned so many eras of hockey and really helped to explain the realities of the game at different points in the history of professional hockey. So thanks, Ken Reed, to a unique look at the history and players of the game. Definitely go out and pick up One to Remember. You won't regret it. Alrighty then, that's it for this week. As always, I hope you've enjoyed the show and our look at One to Remember. If you've got a second, please get on your favorite podcast platform and give the show a good rating, and subscribe if you've got a second. And if you've got even more extra minutes, please give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. I post a lot of content to supplement the discussion of our weekly featured book, so I swear it's worth the follow. Really would appreciate it. Also, if you've got even more minutes, comments or suggestions are always welcome at our email that you can find that only I'll answer for the show. It's fromthepointpodcast16@gmail.com. Now, looking ahead to next week, I'm very happy to announce that we'll be taking the rest of March to feature books on the pioneers of the game of hockey from the women's perspective as we celebrate Women's History Month in the month of March. So our first book will be Crashing the Net, the U.S. Women's Olympic Ice Hockey Team and the Road to Gold by Mary Turco. It's a great look at the story of the U.S. team that won gold in the 1998 Nagano Olympics. Can't wait for that discussion. So till then, thanks for tuning in, and I hope to see you next week. This has been From the Point. I'm Danny Lambert, and as always, stay classy, hockey fans.